take a minute and think, oh, you know, I've always lived in this house, or I've always lived in this household, and how could I see this as an outsider looking in? Like, let's say Lisa's coming over and she's going to come in. What are some of the things Lisa might say? Oh, start here, or do this, or give yourself grace in this area. How can you objectively look at your household and make some decisions that will free up some time and capacity and allow you to give yourself more grace?
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and we have an amazing guest with us today. Her name is Dr. Lisa Woodruff. She is the founder and CEO of Organize 365. Lisa and 87% of Americans believe organization is a learnable skill, yet less than 18% of those same Americans feel that they're organized. As the host of the top-rated Organize 365 podcast with 24 million downloads and counting, Lisa shares strategies for reducing the overwhelm, clearing the mental clutter, and living a productive and organized life. She's here today to talk to us about her newest book, Escaping Quicksand, 10 Steps to Overcome the Overwhelm of Modern Home Life, which is available everywhere tomorrow. But today, Dr. Lisa is here. Dr. Lisa Woodruff, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me.
So clearly this is going to be a low energy interview.
Yeah, right.
I am so excited to talk about your book. But before we do, I want to jump in the Lisa Woodruff time machine. I want you to kind of take us back, get in the DeLorean, and tell us what puts you on the path you're on today, because there are not a lot of people, certainly with your national, if not international, clout, doing what you're doing.
Yeah, you know why I think there aren't a lot is because they're just in the trenches doing it. You know, I, as a female entrepreneur, I'm always looking at like, where are the $10 million and $100 million female CEOs? And I'm like, they're currently building the companies. They don't have the time to step back and tell us how they're building the companies. And I think that's the same in our households. You know, when we leave our family of origin and we move into whatever our dwelling is going to be in our 20s and we start to hashtag adult and maybe get married, have kids, your career, whatever you decide to do, and you add on the complexities in your 30s, by the time you're in your mid 30s, you're really in the thick of things. And then some unexpected events happen, you know, either in the economics or in your personal family, and you start to take on water in your boat. And by the time you turn 40, you're like, oh my gosh, I think I'm going down. Who's going to save me? Can someone please save me? And it's from 40 on, I feel like women are really trying to figure out, how did I get in this situation? I was so competent in my 20s and 30s. Surely I have the skill set to handle my own life. And also, how do I make margin for the things that brought me joy in my 20s and in my teens? Like, how can I insert some of the fun back in my life? Because your 20, your late 30s and 40s, whether you have children or not, whether you get married or not, the complexities of life really start to stack up. Now that I'm in my 50s and I've lived through my 40s, I'm looking back on the company I started when I turned 40 and how I reorganized my house. And I've taught many people how to reorganize their house. That's great. But what I'm really doing in my 50s is I'm getting a PhD, which, thank you, I'm graduating in 1 week. Next Monday, I'll be graduating. So I'm super excited to be Dr. Lisa and really add my voice into academia about what the lived experience for women is like and do some really applied research and test out some interventions for people who are in households and solve some of the problems. And then the other thing that I've been doing in my early 50s is looking back on my 40s and not how did I get my house organized, but what mental mindset shifts did I have to make as a woman in order to be the strong, supportive, positive person I am in my 50s? That's what Escaping Quicksand is for.
And so what was the moment for you, or series of moments? Because what you've built is pretty impressive, to say the least, right? But now you're writing Escaping Quicksand. So was there a moment, an aha moment, where the light bulb went off? You're like, I've got to write this book.
Yes. You know, when you're talking to people who are in their late 30s, especially women in their late 30s, they feel like, I'm doing all the right things. Why am I not getting better results? I am working harder. I am doing more things every day. I'm sacrificing my sleep. And yet I still feel like I'm sinking further and further into the quicksand. And I find for women, this is a universal experience, our late 30s into our 40s. And then as we blow out the candles on the birthday cake and we turn 40, we're like, oh my gosh, I'm still alive. I don't know why we thought we were going to die or something was going to happen when we turned 40. We dreaded so much. And then you realize, okay, I'm still here. And then the second thought is, oh, I'm still here and I'm probably going to live to be 80 or 90. Okay, no way. I cannot keep living this way that I have in the high stress, reactive treadmill life of your late 30s for the rest of my life. What are the things I have to shift or change in my 40s in order to really be thriving and growing and be supported myself like I'm supporting everyone else?
What's exciting about this book too, for me, is that, you know, you're graduating next week, but you're a doctor, right? You've done the research, you did your dissertation, you've been in the weeds, you understand, you talked about applied research. It's such a breath of fresh air. We're talking about things that have grounding in science. And I think that's so important because there's a lot of books out there that tell you how to take control of your life. And it's just some guy who got on ChatGPT and maybe worked at Best Buy. No disrespect to anybody that works at Best Buy, but they're not an expert. And you're an expert. So we've got these 10 steps. Before we do, I know the book starts out with your own kind of personal quicksand story. Everybody's got one, but share yours with us.
Well, yes, everybody has one. And I invite you to share your quicksand story. If you're listening to this at book launch time and you get the book, I mean, share your story and, you know, tag me and I'll reshare it. Because I think the more that we normalize, hashtag adulting is really hard and gets more complex as you age, the more we feel seen and heard. And I think that is one thing. For me, it started, you know, we adopted our children. It was great. We knew they would have some medical challenges. We were going through those. 2008, 2009, you know, a little bit of a dip in the economy, if you remember. The direct sales company I was with went bankrupt twice. So my income went down. Luckily, my husband kept his job. That was a blessing. But at the same time, my parents divorced and then my father was ill and I knew he would pass away. And so my sister and I ended up as his power of healthcare, power of attorney, and ultimately settling the estate. And I live 4 hours away from home. So that involved a lot of travel home. So in addition to my own adulting, that sandwich generation started to kick in where I was also caring for my father. I'm in a similar situation now. My single daughter and her two grandkids live with us. And now we're starting to take care of one of the aging family members in our family. And so this idea of like, you can get your own stuff together, right? But then you have these additional dependents that you weren't really thinking about. Like, you don't think about the fact you're going to have to take care of your parents, you know, and those kinds of things. So those complexities added to this feeling of despair, not having enough income myself, having the additional responsibilities, having to travel, having the world economy go nuts, you know, like today. And it just gets to the point where you're like, is this how life is going to be forever? And I just want to say, no. Often you can get to the point where you think, my life is never going to change. I did go on antidepressants at that time. It was a great decision for me. You know, if you're feeling very hopeless, talk to a doctor. It really can help. And for me, it was situational depression. I was able to get off the antidepressants later. But life can get really, really heavy. And the problem is, and you're a clinical psychologist, I am not a clinical psychologist, but I could see how life gets so overwhelming and it is so hard to dig back out of that hole that you're in because life doesn't stop. It's so rude. Like when you're going through this tragedy, life doesn't just like go on pause so that you can get your stuff together and climb out of the hole. It just keeps like shoveling stuff on top of you. And it's a lot of cognitive work in order to change your mindset, become positive, and rewrite your story.
You're right. You know, like life hits us pretty hard. And usually when it does, it hits us from all angles. And so, you know, that's your quicksand story. Everybody listening to this can think back and say, yep, I've got one. I've got a few, right? I know that that's there. So this book, the subtitle for this is 10 Steps to overcome the overwhelm of modern home life. So I want to go through those at a high level. So let's start with number one and just start rolling.
All right. So number one is learning to manipulate your time. We all have the same hours and day, blah, 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 blah. You've heard all this before. Here's the thing. Not all time is the same. Not all time has the same energy. Not all time, you know, is the same. And I noticed for myself that while I couldn't manufacture time, I could start to reorder the same exact things I was doing and unlock little pockets of time in order to do more tasks or just to have some breathing time. So I really have you look at every single time you're annoyed at something in your life. And usually it's not even involving another person. You're usually waiting for a machine. For me, I'm always waiting for hot water. I'm always annoyed that I have to wait for hot water. I'm so privileged. But how can you capture those minutes and start to really realize you are more in control of your time than you think, even when you don't have a lot of time?
It's interesting. So I'm reading a book, and the chapter I read today was talking about time, and it talked about how the Romans used to set their time, because they set their time what they considered an hour based on the season. So when it was winter, an hour was 45 minutes. When it was summer, an hour was longer. And so the Roman Senate would never introduce anything significant after what effectively, if you convert it into modern time, was 4 p.m. But what that teaches us, and I think what you're saying is, yes, there's a finite amount of time, but you can move things around, shift things, delegate if you have to, find a way to do the things you need to do that are important, because a lot of people will say, oh my God, I've been at a computer for 8 hours and nothing's done, right? But you've got a different way.
Exactly.
Okay, awesome. So I love this. We're already talking about something I think is great, manipulating time. Now, the other one is very different, step two, but I'm interested in this because of the way it's framed. Appreciate the economic power of your household. So I'm sensing a little bit of gratitude in there, economic power. That's interesting the way that's phrased. So talk us through that, Dr. Lisa.
Yeah. So men, join us back in the conversation again. You guys are going to like this chapter. So as you're writing a book for women to like escape the quicksand, I love being on podcasts where I know there are men listening or hopefully still listening at this point in the podcast. 68% of US GDP is household spending. I will say that again. 68% of US GDP is household spending. All the rest is like government and military, by the way. So anyway, we are responsible. Whoever's running the household is responsible for the bulk of the buying decisions that are going on in the U.S. economy, aka, therefore, the entire world. However, when we talk about academia and how we look at housework, first of all, we don't talk about managing the home. We talk about housework, which is the unpaid labor. And most of the populations of those studies is only 17.9% of the population, which are married couples with children. And you listening may not be married and or may not have children. And so you would not be included in that population. When I think about our family, no one in my immediate family would be included in any of those studies. Our son lives alone, not included. My husband and I don't have kids that are school age anymore, not included. My daughter is single with two kids, not included. My mother-in-law is widowed, not included. Okay, so 5 out of 5 of the people that I interact with all the time are not even included in the housework studies. So I really want to bring light to the fact that how the household runs has a huge economic impact on the world. Your job is very, very important in how you run the household, even if it's not paid labor. And our households are changing all the time. They're not necessarily the same households that have been studied in academia over the last decades.
So somebody listening to this, and I'm not trying to sound cynical, but yeah, they might say, you know what, I've got my own problems, Dr. Lisa. I don't really care about the GDP. But tell us why we should appreciate the economic power of our households.
Well, you should, because the common narrative in the media right now is that housework is a he said, she said problem. And I don't like that narrative because, okay, women do more. Fine. It's substantiated in academia. It's been true for millennia. Like, women run households. Welcome to the world. But why you should care is currently the narrative says that female work at home is unpaid, so it's devalued, and that the government should subsidize it for us or along those lines. I don't even know how we get to that part and or how that happens. But my point is, I love running my household. I love the work that I do at home. And to be honest, my P&L is the tax return at the end of the year. I am the CEO of the household, and whatever my husband and I bring in income, that is the P&L of our corporation. And how we decide to save or redistribute that money into the economy is significant. So earning an income from an employer or having your own business and earning an income is significant. Okay, la, 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 you earn so much money, you can put that on your tax return. What are you going to do with it? Okay, you earned it. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to deploy that? And how are you going to use it for significance for now and the future? That is a very big role and responsibility. And I'm happy to have the weight of that. It's unpaid labor, I guess, but it has a significant, an economic significance.
Beautifully reframed. Thank you for that. Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. So let's jump forward.
Okay.
Talk to us about step three.
Oh my gosh. So this is establishing simple, effective morning and evening routines. And no offense, Dr. Richard, but for women, our routines in the morning and the evening are a little bit more simple than some of those that we've seen on podcasts and YouTube and on Instagram. The men are showing these big, long routines. And in this chapter, I really talk about what do you need as a woman to start and end your day? My evening routine is 10 minutes long. I take my supplements, I take a bath, and that's it. But just consciously thinking about, like, you think about what you would do to put a child to bed. What do you need to do to put yourself to bed? What do you need to do first thing in the morning? Just simple things that are important for you that you don't want to miss. And bookend your days. Go to bed, taking care of yourself, wake up, taking care of yourself. You'll probably spend the rest of your day in service to others, but start and end your day in service to yourself.
I love this. So we're basically talking about building in self-care, like it's scheduled self-care.
Yeah.
Beautiful. We are rolling through this, Dr. Lisa. So step four, what do we got?
Okay, this is so great. This is understanding Swiss cheese organizing. So in getting your home organized, now if you have kids under the age of 5, you get a full pass on this. But once your youngest child is over the age of 5, or if you don't have children, getting your house all the way organized is not an effort problem. It is an order of operations problem. So likely when you are ready to organize your house, you immediately start in the kitchen or the family room or the entryway, all these spaces that you see that have clutter in them that have come in throughout the week. I say, no, stop that. Step right over those spaces and go into your storage room, your closet, your bedroom, your bathroom, the spaces that nobody ever sees. Organize those first. When you have those fully organized and then you go to organize the spaces that people are naturally in, your whole entire house will get organized. Because if you keep focusing on the kitchen, the family room, and the entryway, guess what will happen next week? You're focusing on the kitchen, the family room, and the entryway. And then the next week, kitchen, family, you're never going to get to these areas people don't see because you're never going to get the other places all the way organized because people live in them. So they undo them. But if you change the order of operations, you change which areas of the house you organize first, you will get your whole house organized in a year.
Or your money back, right?
Yeah, right. I'm not going to go that far because, you know, that's a motivation on you. I'm a teacher. I will teach, but you have to take and you have to do.
That's fair. All right. So step five, live 50% of your day organized by organizing these three spaces.
You seem skeptical. You seem like maybe I can't do it.
I'm curious. It's not skepticism. It's curiosity.
Okay. Well, this is going to build on steps three and step four. So remember, in step three, we established a morning and an evening routine. Can be as simple as 10 minutes. Doesn't have to be a lot. But we've said, okay, this is how I'm going to go to bed. This is how I'm going to wake up, right? And now we've talked about how organizing our house in different orders can actually give us better results. So in this step, live 50% of your day organized by organizing these three spaces. The spaces are your bedroom, your bathroom, your closet. And if you share those spaces, great. Most of us do organize your side, you know, like the Brady Bunch, put the line down the middle if you need to, but organize your side. And the reason why I say this is because if you wake up in the morning in a bedroom that is organized and you walk into a closet that is organized, and my definition of organized is everything in that closet fits and you would put any of it on your body. That's my only definition of organized. You get dressed, you go into your bathroom, you get ready. All your hygiene supplies are there, everything that you need, no extras. You've got duplicates for when you're going to run out, no samples, no scents that don't work, nothing that's expired. You just get ready and then you leave and go into your kitchen. At the end of the day, you return back to your bathroom, brush your teeth, you go into your closet, get your pajamas on and go into your bed. You are living 50% of your day organized. Okay, fine. I'm counting the sleeping time. But you're waking up organized and you're going to bed organized. And now you're resetting your body to understanding that this is what organization looks like and feels like. These are spaces that you may put off organizing because you'll do your kids' bedrooms before you do your bedroom. When was the last time you organized your bedroom if you have kids? You'll do kids' bedrooms every single weekend. I did every Saturday. Let's go clean and organize the room, kids. Let's go clean and organize the room. And I realized I hadn't organized mine in 5 years. Mine looked like a storage room. So put yourself to bed in an organized space. Wake up, get ready in an organized space. And the reason why this is so powerful is when you are organized, you reduce your decision fatigue. So instead of trying to remember, is this a sweater that has a stain on it? I hope my clothes are clean. Oh yeah, I forgot to order toothpaste yesterday. I don't have toothpaste. You just get up, get ready. Your mind is able to wander and help you process the day and make the decisions that you're about to make, not decide what are you putting on your body this morning.
So I was going to say, this sounds a lot like how Steve Jobs approached getting dressed. He would always wear jeans and a black t-shirt because if everything he wore was identical, he didn't have to spend any cognitive processes on determining what am I going to wear today. Like you said, does this shirt have a stain on it? It was, okay, the same black t-shirt, same jeans. I imagine he could afford multiple pair of t-shirts and jeans, but he no mental energy. So you're talking about basically setting yourself up without even really expending much energy to have more cognitive power, because as we know, and the research is quite clear, every little bit we use, it's a tank, and that level in the tank goes down with everything we do, whether it's thinking about the latte we have to order or whether it's putting a presentation together for a client. So why wouldn't you put systems in place that minimize that kind of take that away? So I think step five is my favorite so far, honestly. I know you don't want to show favoritism, they're all your babies, but I really like step five. So Dr. Lisa, let's talk step six. What do we have there?
Okay, step six is, I am not a perfectionist, I am a woman of excellence. And this is something I realized probably in my mid-40s. I have never been a perfectionist. I wasn't even an AB student. I had this floating C. It's a whole thing. I would paint a room and, you know, someone would say, oh, you missed a spot. And I'd feel so bad that I didn't do it perfectly. I've just never been able to attain perfection. I'm a busybody. I'm always going. I'm always doing things. And so for a long time, I just said, oh, yeah, I'm not a perfectionist. As in, stop judging me. I know it's not perfect. I can't be perfect. But I didn't have anything to replace that. And then in my 40s, I realized, you know what? That's not really fair. Because when I'm saying I'm not a perfectionist, what I'm saying is, like, don't judge me. I can't do it perfectly. I am less than, is kind of what I was saying. But when I say I'm a woman of excellence, that's different. That's saying I am an excellent woman. There is no such thing as perfect. I am giving my excellent effort at everything I am doing. And so I am going to give myself grace, because perfection actually isn't a thing. And when you are striving for perfection or judging someone else because they're not perfect, you're judging. It's a judgment. But when you're striving for excellence or you put in excellent effort, you can give yourself grace because you're no longer being judged or judging yourself.
I heard somebody put this in a similar way. They refer to themselves as, I'm not a perfectionist, I'm an optimalist. I try and do the best I can.
I like that.
Isn't that good? I didn't invent it, so I'm not taking credit for it, but trying to do the best every day, because yes, because nobody's perfect, right? Nobody can be perfect, and people make themselves crazy trying to do things perfectly. So and that could be starting a business, having a tough conversation, we just have to jump in there and do the best we can, and you give yourself grace if it's not exactly the way you thought it would go, but tomorrow you could always be 1% better. So I said I like step five the best. I still do, I think, but step six is definitely for me number two, right? So I'm creating a hierarchy here for you. That's really exciting. Great. Let's talk about step seven, Lisa.
Oh, step seven. Okay, so now that you know you're not a perfectionist, now I can talk to you about step seven. I kind of needed you to think that way before I could tell you this. So this is letting go of unrealistic household expectations. So I don't know where you got your housework expectations from. Probably it was a couple of things. One, your family of origin, like however your mom kept house, and or grandparents, you know, when you were in their houses. Second, it's TV shows. For me, it was the Brady Bunch. I wanted to be Alice. It wasn't until later I realized she was the live-in maid. Anyways, it was Alice for me. And then third, social media, like what you see other people putting on there or what you think when you go to their house for a party and you only go into a couple of their rooms, you imagine that the rest of their house is exactly like these couple of rooms you're in. So all we see is the highlight reel everywhere. And we then try to match that in our own house. I don't even know why, because I don't even have people come to my house. I don't know about you, but we don't have parties in my house. Like, who am I trying to impress? My family doesn't even notice, nor do they care. So lower your housework expectations, lower the quality, get more of your time back to do something else of significance. I'm not saying like live in a pig pen. I'm just saying, why are you doing what you're doing? I was vacuuming the house every single day at 5 o'clock because that's what my dad wanted. My husband didn't even notice. Once I realized he didn't notice and I got over the whole huge temper tantrum that I threw, then I was like, oh, this is actually freeing. I only have to vacuum the house if it's dirty or if I want it vacuumed. I don't have to do it every single day. Like, it's amazing the things we do at home and we keep perpetuating just because we've always seen it done or we think it's what everybody else is doing.
There's actually a good amount of clinical research around this. So this phenomenon on the internet actually began out of these online games like World of Warcraft, where people would create this idealized persona of themselves, referred to clinically as the trophy case presentation. What we started seeing with social media, you called it the highlight reel, Dr. Lisa, that's exactly what we're seeing, is that people would go post, oh, look at me, my life is so wonderful. And you, who lives four doors down, internalize that and think, well, hey, why isn't my life as wonderful? But the reality is, to your point exactly, and I think the house party was the perfect analogy, what you're seeing is the living room and maybe the kitchen, but you don't see that the other rooms are disasters, right? So this is a really good chapter because unrealistic expectations, whether it's housework, whatever it is going to lead you down to a path of stress and anxiety. So this is an important one. So I'm grateful for this one.
Great. Well, then you're going to like step eight.
All right. What do we got?
So step eight is to stop hiding your invisible work and have it take center stage. So what I found for myself personally was that I was doing all the housework when the family was gone, because to be honest, I like to do it in a quiet house, put a good podcast in and, you know, just putter around and get all the housework done. But then they would come home from wherever they were, sporting, working, whatever they're doing. And I'd be like, okay, I'm ready to sit down and read a book. And they're like, well, why are you reading a book? You need to do this. You need to do that. And I was like, okay, again, order of operations problem. If you guys are going to go play golf and sports and all that, I'm going to sit down and read a book. And when you get home, I'm going to have you watch me do dishes and clean and vacuum and do the laundry and watch the work that's being done versus having invisible fairies do it while you're gone.
Unless you have robots, right?
Yeah, my robots don't work. If we could have a conversation about that, my vacuum robot is subpar.
Subpar?
Yeah, I've replaced her three times and she still does not work well enough.
Maybe that'll be another episode, I think. Yeah. Let's talk step number nine.
Now we're moving more into planning and moving into your unique purpose. So step nine is to establish your weekly rhythm. Now you're really taking on the mantle of being the CEO of the household, being that household manager, the things that need to get done that are beyond housework and beyond just organizing the living spaces, but really taking care of the information management, the bill pay, the calendars, all of those things. That's establishing a weekly planning rhythm. You would never in a business just show up every single day and check your email and be like, oh, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do today. No, you would have a plan of how you're going to run your business. And if you have employees, what work they're going to do and what your KPIs are and what your marketing plan is going to be. This is what you do as the CEO of the household, is you really look at the next 7 days and you think, okay, in the next 7 days with the resources we have, what bills can we pay? What additional things maybe can we do? What to-dos that have been on my never-ending to-do list, am I going to pull out and actually do them? How am I going to strategically plan this week?
This makes sense. And I would expect this from a master organizer such as yourself, right? We're planning. And when you get in the habit of planning, then that becomes automatic. So this is outstanding. All right. We got one more step. Take us home, Lisa.
So the planning in step 9 is called the Sunday Basket. That is the product that I had created. And I plan on doing my academic level research on as applied psychology now that next week I'm going to graduate and get my doctorate. Step 10 is part of that, and it's moving from to-do lists to productivity. And one of the things that I noticed in my 30s and 40s was that I had to stop using my brain to remember things because I needed my brain to do other things like problem solve or you know, assimilate things or do some research. So I started writing every single thing down on a note card, not a to-do list, because my to-do lists were pages and pages long. So instead of to-do lists, I would write every single thing I needed to remember on an index card because I kept buying index cards at back to school time. And so I had so many index cards because the kids had stopped using them. So I started using them one idea on an index card. And then as I ran across the index card, if it was already done, I just recycled it. And if it wasn't, I would put it in my Sunday basket if it could wait till Sunday. And if I had to do it before Sunday, I would keep it with me. So I always had a handful of cards that I needed to do that my brain had reminded me about that I needed to do right away. But I would have 50, maybe 100 in the Sunday basket. Like our brain has so many ideas. And once you do this for about 4 weeks, your brain starts to go, oh, I don't have to remember these things because she's going to write it down and put it in that Sunday basket and she's going to deal with it later. Now I'm free to think about other things. And this is actually what I'm doing my dissertation on. This prospective memory, the memory of remembering future-oriented tasks that interrupts our working memory, what we're doing now. And what I did before I did the index cards is I would have a thought and it was a really quick thing I could do in 2 to 3 minutes. And you know what productivity people say, if you can do it in 2 to 3 minutes, just do it right now, right? So I'd do it right now. Then I'd have another thought. Pretty soon an hour would pass. I had done 3 to 4 things that I just thought of. And you know what I didn't do, Dr. Richard? The thing I was supposed to be doing that hour. And so I became really, really good at doing 2 to 3 minute tasks all day long like a chipmunk. And really, really bad at doing anything of significance. So once I started writing all of these things that my brain wanted to tell me about all the time onto a piece of paper, I could write it down and keep working on my task of the hour. And at the end of that hour, I could look at all those index cards and I could say, okay, 9 out of 10 of these are just going to go in the Sunday basket. I will deal with that on Sunday. And this one actually is important and I need to remember to do that today. And now that I do that, I remain present in everything that I'm doing because I'm not always trying to decide whether the thing that I'm thinking about is important or not. Oh, so this would be great to tell you. So I was reading a research study, and the research study said when you have a prospective memory thought, you stop and your brain makes a decision of what to do with that information. And I thought, no, I don't, because I have a habit of just writing it down and looking at it later. My brain doesn't even make the decision anymore. Wish I could really find that study again. But anyways.
But I think we're talking about something that's valuable here, right? Because the productivity experts have a lot of theories about why we organize things. You know, and I've read research that says it's best to do the hard things first. You should absolutely get the hardest thing done out of the way, because if you do the hardest thing, then the rest of the day just flows like water and it's easy. I've seen other research that, and they're both very, fairly compelling, right? That says, well, start with really simplistic tasks. Because if you start with a simple task, you work your way up, right? You get your little win and your kind of medium-sized win, and then you're ready to tackle that big monster and get the big win. But the reality is, we can be very busy all day and get nothing done that we need to get done. And so I think what step number 10 does is, for men, women, and chipmunks, is that it moves us into a place where the things that we're really needing to get done now are top of mind, are getting your energy, and those other things go into, as you said, the Sunday basket. So, Lisa, I feel like we deserve a prize. We've gotten through the 10 steps. We're escaping quicksand. This is super cool. And I know that this book is going to be everywhere tomorrow. People are going to grab it. People are getting excited. But before we kind of transition to the end of our time together, I wanted to give you an opportunity just to talk about your show for a couple minutes.
Oh, thank you so much. So the Organized 365 podcast has been around for, it'll be 12 years in September. And it's really a platform where I just share externally the thoughts I'm having in my head. And they really seem to resonate with other women, they're actually the thoughts they're having in their head as well. And I really think about, how do we run our households? What's the significance of our household? I draw a lot of parallels from being an entrepreneur to being running your household. And yeah.
Awesome. And we'll have a link to that down below in the show notes if anybody wants to check that out. But this has been so much fun. I've greatly enjoyed talking to you. As you know, Lisa, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. That is, what is your biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Yeah, I think it would be to think about your household and how your household is run differently. To just take a minute and think, oh, you know, I've always lived in this house, or I've always lived in this household, and how could I see this as an outsider looking in? Like, let's say Lisa's coming over and she's going to come in. What are some of the things Lisa might say? Oh, start here, or do this, or give yourself grace in this area. How can you objectively look at your household and make some decisions that will free up some time and capacity and allow you to give yourself more grace?
Well said. The book is called Escaping Quicksand, 10 Steps to Overcome the Overwhelm of Modern Life. That's available everywhere books are sold tomorrow. Like I said, we got a link to that in the show notes below. But Dr. Lisa, if people want to learn more about you, where can they go on the internet?
I'm Organized 365 everywhere. The podcast, the website, LinkedIn, it's Organized 365. And thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was so much fun. And for each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this, thank you. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go grab this book, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because that helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag #MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.